Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com and my podcast with Bob Kendrick. This is presented by Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, and the good folks at Schnucks. You need groceries, think local, think Schnucks. This is a podcast that I have been waiting to do for many, many years, and I'm so glad I had the chance to visit with Bob Kendrick. He is the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. The Negro Leagues Baseball Museum was founded in 1990 by former Negro League baseball players, most namely Buck O'Neill. The museum charts the progress of the Negro Leagues with placards, artifacts, and interactive exhibits. It's an incredible look at American history and some of the greatest players that ever played the game of baseball. Bob is phenomenal in keeping their memories and the history alive. Enjoy my conversation and this walk down memory lane, if you will, with Bob Kendrick.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com.
Well, I find this place, Bob, to be magical. Is that a good way to describe it?
I think it's an outstanding way to describe it. I still have that feeling, and I've come here every single day for the better part, and it is something very special. And you feel it when you walk into the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum.
How many years for you now?
Count years professionally, I started in 1998 as the museum's first director of marketing, but my involvement goes back to 1993 as a volunteer with this organization.
And it's exploded, obviously.
Oh, it has. It's grown leaps and bounds since the time that it was organized in a little one-room office barely bigger than the space that we're sitting in recording this. In 1990, and of course, the recognition and the awareness of this history and the museum as a caretaker of that history has grown enormously since that time.
It's a big responsibility, isn't it?
Well, it is, because you understand that you are basically carrying a piece of baseball and Americana that was really going to die. See, this history was going to go extinct when that last Negro League left the face of this earth. We cannot allow that to happen. So, yeah, it's a daunting task to know that you've got a piece of history in your hands that if you don't save it, there's a good likelihood that it will fall by the wayside. It will die when that last Negro Leaguer passes away. We don't want that to happen. I tell our guests all the time, Dan, that the Negro Leagues Museum doesn't need to survive. It has to survive.
Absolutely.
So that we don't lose this precious piece of baseball and Americana. And the more majority of people who come here, they don't really know the full depth, the breadth, the scope, the magnitude of what this history represented both on and off the field. I do think the work that we've done now over the past 28 years has certainly elevated the consciousness of those. And so they come in expecting to meet some pretty good baseball players. And of course, you're going to leave not being disappointed. You're going to meet some of the greatest baseball players to ever put on a baseball uniform.
Absolutely.
But by the time you walk away from this experience, I truly believe that you walk away with an even greater appreciation and understanding of just how great this country really is.
How did it all start?
Right here in Kansas City, 1920, yeah. As an organized Negro League. Now, black folks been playing baseball since the late 1800s, some will say even as far back as slavery. But in an organized fashion, the Negro Leagues organized right here in Kansas City, 1920, right around the corner from where we operate, the old Paseo YMCA. The building still stands.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Andrew Rube Foster, the architect, led a contingent of 8 independent black baseball team owners into Kansas City. They met at the old Paseo YMCA. Out of that meeting came the birth of the Negro National League, the first successful organized black baseball league. And then, of course, the Negro Leagues would go on to operate in this country remarkably for 40 years, from 1920 until 1960.
People don't realize that.
No, because even if you understood that there was a Negro Leagues, I think the more majority would say, well, Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier
right.
In 1947. So if there was a Negro Leagues, surely it ended in and around that time. Well, the leagues would go on to operate another 13 years after Jackie. Why? Because it took Major League Baseball 12 years.
Sure.
Before every Major League team had at least one black baseball player. The Boston Red Sox would become the last team to integrate in 1959 when they signed Pumpsy Green. And that would complete the integration cycle. By 1960, the Negro Leagues ceased operations because by then the best young black stars had moved into the major leagues or into their minor league system, and there was no replenishing system. So the leagues would dissolve.
Where would they play, and how would they originate the teams? How did that all come about?
Well, in 1920, eight teams made up the Negro National League, including the St. Louis Giants.
Right.
One of the original members, and then the St. Louis Giants would become the great St. Louis Stars. So the city of St. Louis certainly has had its representation as it relates to black baseball history and rich black baseball history, because you had some superstar Negro League players that called St. Louis home, including the great Cool Papa Bell and Willie Wells and Mule Suttles. These are all Hall of Famers that played there for the St. Louis Stars. And so, yeah, St. Louis has certainly seen its fair share of great baseball being played there from a black baseball perspective. But these were independent black baseball teams that came into the fold. So when Rube organized the Negro Leagues in 1920, he organized the Negro National League. Well, in 1923, a guy named Ed Bolden formed a rival league known as the Eastern Colored League. 1924, your very first Negro Leagues World Series, the Kansas City Monarchs against the Hilldale Daisies out of Derby, Pennsylvania. And the Monarchs would actually win that inaugural World Series, led by the great Hall of Famer Wilbur Bullet Joe Rogan.
Yeah. You're like a walking encyclopedia.
Well, it's fun, though, man. You know, Dad, I considered myself to be a baseball fan, and am a baseball fan, and was just fascinated by this other chapter of baseball history that I didn't know anything about when I got involved with the museum going back to 1993. And I just fell in love with the story. I fell in love with the athletes who made this story. And I just wanted to learn as much as I possibly could. I think I became almost a little self-absorbed with this, wanting to know as much as I could. And then I didn't want to keep it to myself.
Yeah.
I wanted to share it with other folks. And, of course, I met Buck O'Neill for the first time in 1993. And I tell people all the time, once you met Buck and you were bitten by the Buck bug, it was a wrap. I just wanted to be on Buck's team. And so I was so blessed to spend so many years with him, and I got to meet so many of these former Negro League players, the guys who really played in the heart and soul of the Negro Leagues, 30s and 40s, and those guys are virtually all gone now.
Right.
Yeah.
With the museum, how did you find the artifacts, the pictures, the gloves, the uniforms?
Oh, man, I tell you
I can't
what,
imagine what that was like.
Well, it was a challenge, and we're so fortunate because I'd say 95% of the things that you see on display at the Negro Leagues Museum came from the players and or their families. It's only been over the last decade or so that we've started attempting to compete for memorabilia. I tell people all the time, we've almost become our own worst enemy. The more we're popularizing the story, we're driving the market for these artifacts to the point that it makes it difficult for us to compete to go get them now. These things fetch a hefty price tag virtually every time that they come up for, you know, when they do come up to be sold and that kind of thing. And so we have to be very prudent. We have to kind of be very smart about the things that we try to go get, because we just simply don't have the budgets to go out and purchase a lot of this stuff. But fortunately, many of the players' families or the players donated some of their things. I tell people all the time, though, I wish this museum had been born 25, 30 years before.
Oh, man.
We would have so much more stuff. But, you know, the thing that drives this museum is not the stuff. It's the story.
Yeah.
And that story had escaped the pages of American history books. So countless generations of us went through our own formal educations without knowing one of the most significant chapters, not in baseball history, but in American history. And that's the powerful and compelling story of the Negro Leagues.
When you, well, let's talk about this. I always tell our fans, and here we are in a weekend with the Cardinals and the Royals. I always say, if you're going to make the trek from St. Louis to Kansas City, you have to stop by the museum, because it's a unbelievable place. You're going to teach your children. You're going to learn. I can't do it justice. So if I was to get a ticket,
yes,
and I'm walking through that museum, what am I going to get, Bob?
Oh, you're going to get an amazing experience. And it's an experience that is obviously anchored in the ugliness of American segregation, horrible chapter in this country's history. But that's not the story here. No, the story here is, out of segregation rose this wonderful story of triumph and conquest. And it's all based on one small, simple principle. You won't let me play with you? Then I'll just create a league of my own. the Negro Leagues. And when you stop to think about that, that is the American way. So even though America was trying to prevent them from sharing in the joys of her so-called national pastime, it was the American spirit that allowed them to persevere and prevail. And I think that is the spirit that drives this story. So if you come here expecting to be introduced to a sad, somber story, you got the wrong place. No, this is a celebration. It is the celebration, Dan, of the power of the human spirit to persevere and prevail. So you're going to be introduced to an amazing story of baseball and Americana. And then, of course, you're going to meet some pretty good doggone athletes at the same time. You know, they could play. They really could play. And their contemporaries knew that they could play.
Yeah.
It was just the social conditions of our time and fear that kept these athletes from playing in the major leagues. So, of course, for the African-American and Hispanic ball player, the Negro Leagues provided a place for them to showcase their world-class playing abilities. And so you basically take a nostalgic journey back in time. And so you get to see how our country was, but you also get to see how our country unfolded and really started to live out this greatness that we know about America. And I just think the Negro Leagues, the story of that really embodies that American spirit.
I love the fact that you say it's a story. And yes, it's a horrible chapter in our country, but you come away saying we're going to make it positive too.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I love, Bob.
That's
and that was
premise.
Buck O'Neill, and that's you.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the premise to this story. I think sometimes people expect sadness. But when you walk through that museum, you don't see sadness.
No.
You see these beautiful people dressed immaculately going to a ball game. You see the pride that emanated from the player's face as they were getting to the opportunity to play the game that they love. Now, did they like some of the things that happened to them as they traveled the highways and byways of this country? Of course not. There would be occasions, Dan, when they could go into a town, fill up the ballpark, yet not get a meal from the same fans who had just cheered them or not have a place to stay.
It's terrible.
So they would have to sleep on the bus and eat their peanut butter and crackers until they could find a place that would provide basic services for them. But they never allowed that to kill their love of the game. So if I got to sleep on the bus, eat my peanut butter and crackers, I'm going to keep playing ball. And that's the prevailing spirit here. And so they love this game. And they were good at this game, and because of the passion that they had for our sport, they not only changed our game, they changed our country. And that comes across so triumphantly when you visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum.
There's still a handful of Negro League baseball players that are alive.
Yes, yes.
Do they reach out to you all the time?
Yeah, no, we still stay in communication. We keep a list of those, and you know, we try to keep up with those. And every now and then, a guy surfaces that we didn't know about. And then, unfortunately, the flip side of that, the guy passes away that
right.
we don't always know about. And so, you know, when we built this museum back in 1990, we realized that we were literally in a race against time. That the people who made this story were all going to die. Not a matter of fact, not a matter of if, but when.
Right.
So you knew it was a race of time, a race against time, and every time you lose one, you lose a piece of that history. That window closes a little bit more, and it does put a little added pressure on the museum to make sure that we document and substantiate as much of this history as we possibly can while we still have those living members. But not only are you going to lose the people who played in these leagues, you're going to lose the people who saw them play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they too can attest to what these stories are. You know, I love when the people from that era come here to the museum and you can see these cascades of memory coming back. Yeah, they're remembering what they wore to the game, where they went, what club they went to after the game. So even though we were living in a segregated society, Negro Leagues baseball brought joy to so many.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to so many. Mm-hmm.
Hey, St. Louis, Dan McLaughlin here, and I have a scoop for you. Download the Schnucks Rewards app. Trust me, it'll pay off. You shop at Schnucks like normal, earn points on almost everything in the store, and redeem the points for money off. Easy as that. If earning money off your groceries wasn't enough, it also has cool features to make shopping at Schnucks even easier. You can locate items in the store, refill prescriptions, check the weekly ad. It's a grocery game changer. So download Schnucks Rewards from the App Store or Google Play and start saving today.
Can I put you on the spot?
Of course.
Okay, so you got Buck O'Neill, you got Satchel, you got Josh Gibson, you got all these great names, cool Papa Bell. When you hear all these stories, Let's talk best hitter. People say Josh Gibson.
I'd have to go Josh.
Okay.
I have to go Josh, because when you look at what Josh did, and he was doing it as a catcher, this incredible combination of power and average. See, sometimes you get lost in the power.
Right.
That we forget that Gibson was a great hitter. Lifetime batting average of .354.
See, and I would have messed that up. Yeah, I always think the power.
Yeah, and in head-to-head competition against major leaguers in countless exhibition games, hit over .420.
Wow.
To go with that big bat. So he wasn't just a big bat, and he didn't strike out a lot. You know, Josh was that kind of hitter who might strike out 20, 25 times in a season. Buck O'Neill would describe him in this way, and if you can envision this, Josh Gibson had the eyes of Ted Williams and the power of Babe Ruth rolled into one dynamic package. His outs were loud.
Loud outs.
Yeah, as Buck would say, the third baseman and the shortstop were damn near in left field when Gibson came up there, because you could get killed. They basically saying, Josh, if you want to bunt it, go right ahead. We'll let you have it.
Best pitcher, Satchel?
You know, there were a lot of great pitchers in the Negro Leagues. There's only one Satchel Paige.
Right.
And for me, yeah, there are guys whose stuff may have been just as good. Nobody was better, though. But when you talk about the complete package, when you talk about longevity, great stuff, charisma, there's only one Satchel Paige.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just sharing here recently. This week marks the anniversary of him playing in St. Louis for the St. Louis Browns. And he pitches a 12-inning, 1-0 shutout over the Detroit Tigers. Dan, he was supposed to be 46 years old at that time.
Right.
If you believe that he was born in 1906, which I absolutely do not believe.
Right.
He was more closer to 56 than he was 46 at that time. 12-inning, 1-0 shutout. He struck out 9, gave up 7 hits, and the most remarkable, surprising on this stat line, he walked 2 people. Satchel rarely ever walked anybody,
exactly.
So they likely were intentional walks
right.
in that game at age 46.
It's incredible.
Well, he makes his 2 All-Star games as a member of the St. Louis Browns.
Right.
Yeah, he's named the 2 All-Star teams well into his 40s with the St. Louis Browns.
How old do you think he really was?
Most believe he was at least 10 years older than he claimed.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least 10. And you can rest assured that he was at least, no less than 5 years older than what he claimed, but most believe he was at least 10. And, of course, Satchel, being the savvy businessman that he was, he played that whole age thing up to the hilt. He milked it for everything he could get out of it, and it added to the lore and legend of this great ball player. But I can tell you now, nobody pitched that baseball any better than Satchel. There may have been some that were as good. Nobody was better than Satchel Paige.
Cool, Papa Bell. So many of our fans in St. Louis are going to be listening to
Absolutely.
This. Absolutely. So give me an idea of what this guy was like and how good he was.
Well, number one, they tell me they got a street there in St. Louis that's named for him, and I believe the speed limit on that street probably 30, 35 miles per hour. That's too slow. That's too slow. They should have had a section of the freeway named for Cool Papa Bell.
You know,
beyond having the greatest nickname, I believe, in baseball history, Cool Papa was outstanding. He's one of the stars of the Negro Leagues, and he's also one of those transcending stars.
Yeah.
That name went mainstream, and you knew that name, Cool and Satchel and Josh. He was everything that they said he was, and then some. He came to St. Louis as a pitcher, and as fate would have it, he hurt his arm. And when he hurt his arm, they moved him to the outfield, and the rest is history. He used that blazing speed to run down everything in the outfield. Didn't have a great throwing arm because he had hurt his arm, but he had a very quick release. And because of the great speed, he could play so shallow that you couldn't bloop it in front of him. And unless you hit it over on a rope, you couldn't get it over his head. You know, he was a switch hitter, but primarily batted off that left side. So he's running out of the box.
Yeah.
And so the stories of his speed are just legendary. And this is the honest to God's truth. Cool Papa Bell twice scored from first base on a bunt in exhibition games against Major League All-Stars. Yeah, and one time it was Satchel Paige who dropped the bunt.
Is that right?
Cool just never stopped running.
Yeah.
And so the major leaguers really hadn't seen this before, and so the pitcher didn't back up home plate in time. Couldn't get there before Cool got in. By the time the catcher and the third baseman converged to field the ball, third baseman got it, threw the ball to first base, Cool was rounding third.
It's incredible.
The pitcher easily.
It's incredible. Yeah.
And there have always been a lot of fast guys. Matter of fact, we had one of those fast guys here the other day from your ball club, Willie McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, and Vince Coleman. And so the Cardinals, no speed. They've
absolutely
had a history of guys who could run. But Buck O'Neill said the difference between Cool Papa Bell and the other fast guys was his uncanny and amazing ability to cut that bag on the inside. Where most guys got to take that big rounding turn,
sure.
He says Cool is on the inside of the bag. And Dan Buck said that Cool would be so low to the ground that he could literally smack the bag with his hand and not fall over.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. It is physics-defying is what it is.
Yes.
Yeah, but again, I think every now and then somebody comes along and they're born to do what they do. Satchel was born to pitch that ball. Cool was given a little something that the rest of us just didn't have. You know what I mean? And so he was special. Yeah, all those guys that you just named were special.
How many of the current major leaguers come by?
We're getting more and more.
It's getting important. More and more. They should
to
be
my
here.
Delight. To my absolute delight. Because it used to be that I would have to try to call the teams.
Yes.
And say, guys, we're in town. Why don't you come on by? I want to extend this invitation for you to come by. But now more and more guys are calling me saying, hey, I got guys who want to come by the museum. Can you be there to meet them? And the answer is yes. I will be there to meet Mike Claiborne from your team. Of course, brought down some guys this week. And we had just a wonderful time. I don't know how much they knew about the Negro Leagues prior to their visit. They probably had heard about the Negro Leagues. It's hard to play ball there in St. Louis and walk past that statue of Cool Papa Bell.
Absolutely.
And at least not have some recognition of the Negro Leagues. But I think yesterday when they delved in, and I say yesterday, on Thursday of this week, when they delved into this story in a much deeper, meaningful fashion, they were blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were blown away. They were blown away by the circumstances in which these men had to play this game.
Young kids don't even know.
They can't fathom an America that was divided by color.
Right.
Yeah, they may experience racism in their life, but they won't experience segregation. And so, yes, segregation through the eyes of young people are summarized quite simply. That was dumb. And they're right. It was dumb, but that was the way that our country was. And we've continually and perpetually evolved from that, even though we still got work to do. We still have a lot of work to do in this country as it relates to race relations.
No question.
And if they're going to be asked to kind of carry that mantle, then they have to at least have some understanding that life hadn't always been as good as it is today for some of the citizens. So you can imagine the look on their faces when they come in and see segregated sections of the ballpark, and you could go to jail for sitting in the wrong section of a ballpark or drinking from the wrong water fountain or using the wrong restroom. And as we both know, going to jail was some of the good things that happened. A lot of people lost their lives for breaking those simple societal standards. And so what we attempt to do here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum is take segregation, complex subject matter, difficult for us as an adult to understand, no less our children, and try to simplify it by telling it through the eyes of these enormously talented black baseball players who just wanted to play ball. And so we had a great time on Thursday just walking around telling lies. And
good way to put it. It's fun.
No, but they were fascinated by it and really intelligent young people. And so they were, you know, really delving into this in a much deeper capacity than sometimes some of the athletes do when they come. They're so amazed by some of the artifacts and those kinds of things, particularly the old equipment.
Yeah.
You know, you see the evolution
that's
of the equipment alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you see these old wooden shin guards. And
right.
They kind of look, and that took them aback. Wooden shin guards, yeah, they were wooden back in the time.
That's right.
You know, back in the day. And then you see this old chest protector that really wasn't much of a chest protector.
No.
It didn't protect a whole lot.
No.
You know, it was there. And so they're always fascinated by that. But I think they, too, enjoy the stories that we share. And many of these stories, theirs, are stories that the late, great Buck O'Neill shared with me firsthand, and I get to share them with a new generation of baseball players, and it never gets old.
I bet.
No, it doesn't.
How about video? Have you found any video? Are there any, you know, remaining videos out there?
You know, there's probably some stuff sitting in somebody's attic or basement.
That's
right
what I'm saying.
Now. You know, every now and then something surfaces, an artifact, even a little video. Someone not too long ago found video of a guy named John Donaldson. And John Donaldson pitched for the Kansas City Monarchs, and he's in that early era of black baseball. Over 500 verifiable wins.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yes. He was so good that J.L. Wilkinson, who owned the Kansas City Monarchs. Now, remind you, J.L. Wilkinson had Hall of Famers Bullet Rogan, Hall of Famers Satchel Paige, Hilton Smith, Andy Cooper, Jose Mendez, all Hall of Fame pitchers through the years with his Kansas City Monarchs.
Yeah.
He says John Donaldson is the greatest baseball pitcher he ever saw. Now, he was partisan to Donaldson because Donaldson made him a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah, he was like a hired hand. But 400-plus verifiable wins, strikeout feats of 30-plus in multiple games, back-to-back no-hitters, that kind of stuff. And so this guy, and the story has it, the guy had his wife ring. The diamond had fallen out the ring. He takes it to the shop. The guy gonna fix the diamond in the ring. Well, the man in the store, the shop, loses his wife's ring. He trades an old video camera for it.
Is that right?
Uh-huh. And now, the video camera was eventually found under the man's bed. Now, I'm sure this was in the guest room because after he lost his wife's ring, he couldn't go back to
right,
that room.
Right, right.
And they happened to take a look at what was on the camera.
Yeah.
And it was 39 seconds of video of John Donaldson in action.
Is that right?
Great left-hand pitcher. And that's how it was found.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and so you know there's other stuff out there like that. And so somebody, go up in your attic, go up in your basement, see what you got, and we'd love to have it
here
at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum.
You ever have people come through, Bob, that you talk to and they say, I'm sorry, I'm embarrassed, you know, by the segregation of what the country was? And as you pointed out beautifully, no more segregation, but still a lot of racism. Do you get people that say, I'm sorry?
Yeah, I think we
you know what I mean?
We get a little bit of that, but you know, it's not about guilt. You know, it's about learning.
Yeah.
And then learning from our mistakes. But for me, one of the greatest memories for me at the museum also involved a St. Louis guy, my dear friend, the great Ozzie Smith. And Ozzie was here for our grand opening of the new facility in 1997. And I never forget, as he walked through the museum and he ended up on the baseball field where the statues are, he said it was one of the most eeriest feelings he ever had in his life because he knew, understood, and embraced that he stood on the shoulders of those pioneers to be able to have the opportunity to pursue what became a Hall of Fame career, what became the Wizard, and how he became the Wizard and one of the greatest to ever do it. It doesn't happen without those heroes of the Negro Leagues, and he understood that. And it was very emotional for him. He's been coming back ever since. He's a dear friend of mine, dear friend of the Negro Leagues Museum, and of course, like all of us, love the late, great Buck O'Neill.
Mm-hmm. Buck O'Neill, his involvement, how did that all start here?
Well, I can tell you now, and I say this with no disrespect to anyone who had anything to do with this museum, it doesn't happen without Buck O'Neill. I call it the house that Buck built.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, in New York, they got the house that Ruth built.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Here in Kansas City, we got the house that Buck built. And I do. And I say that with no disrespect to anyone who had anything to do with the emergence and rise of this great museum. But it does not happen without Buck O'Neill. Buck O'Neill spent the last 16 years of his life out there preaching the gospel of the Negro Leagues and the virtues of his museum to any and everyone who would listen. It was a crusade, and it drove him. It really did. It drove him, and I think that's why he lived such a fulfilled life. Now, Buck was always the consummate glass half full kind of personality. Anyway, that's who he was.
Sure.
But to build this museum and to make sure that America's unsung baseball heroes would never be forgotten, I think it carried him over the last 16 years of his life.
Sure.
It motivated.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah, it gave him reason to get up every single day. He didn't get paid to do this. It was 100% voluntary, and he loved it. Yeah, and people still come here and say, oh, I came here, and Buck was just here sitting there, and he took me through on a tour of the museum,
oh, yeah,
and he signed this for me, and he took pictures with us. That was Buck.
Yeah. Does Major League Baseball contact you guys about the past? hey, are we missing this player? Or do you have something with this player? Should he be in the Hall of Fame? Veterans Committee, you know, those kind of things. Do you get those calls?
You know, we still get inquiries about certain guys, particularly when certain events that take place. And more Major League teams are doing, increased effort to help educate their fan base about the history of the Negro Leagues. Because as you well know, no sport holds to its history the way baseball does.
That's right.
Now, it's that one sport where we constantly and consistently compare the stars of the past with today's stars. And whoever your favorite baseball player was when you were a kid, you can pretty much rest assured that's going to be your favorite baseball player the rest of your life.
That's right.
So as they're having celebrations this year, of course, the Braves and ESPN got together, did a celebration of Henry Aaron. So, yeah, they called us and looked for resources about Hank Aaron as a member of the Indianapolis Clowns, or if it's Willie Mays, as a member of the Birmingham Black Barons. And I mentioned those two names because when you talk about Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, most will say unequivocally, the two greatest living Major League Baseball players today, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays.
Sure,
both come out of the Negro Leagues. So if you had doubt about the talent that was there in the Negro Leagues, you should not have to have any doubt when you start talking about, again, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays coming out. And most people had no idea that those two legendary baseball players come out of the Negro Leagues. Henry Aaron with the Indianapolis Clowns, Willie Mays with the Birmingham Black Barons. And then you start talking about Ernie Banks, Roy Campanella. You know, the list just goes on and on. And so it's hard to imagine our game without those great stars. But if you can imagine what this game was like before 1947, you may not have had Hank Aaron and Willie Mays in the major leagues. Yeah. And that talent didn't get better after 1947. They were playing great baseball well before 1947. So there's no question, had the doors open sooner, the record books would be entirely different.
How often do you get asked to speak about this?
All the time. And I enjoy it.
You love it.
I really do. And what I'm finding is that that is increasing. People have an interest. But, you know, I've always believed that I don't think there was ever a time when people didn't want to know about the Negro Leagues. They just had no way to know about the Negro
Leagues.
That's
right.
Yeah, it's not in the pages of American history books. And so countless generations of us have gone through our own formal educations without knowing, again, one of the most significant chapters, not in baseball history, but in American history. And so as we've made this story more readily available, the interest in it continues to grow, and it puts a little bit more demand on us to provide access, even greater access to this story. And so while we want everybody to come to Kansas City, we realize that that's not going to happen. And so we started building traveling exhibitions and so that we could take this story out on the road and give people an opportunity to be introduced to it. We hope that we whet your appetite to the point that you do want to come to Kansas City and experience this firsthand. But we did not want to leave this story isolated in Kansas City. It's too powerful, too compelling, too meaningful to leave here just hoping that people will make their way to Kansas City.
Final question. How do people get involved with the museum? Donations, I'm
absolutely.
Sure. You
absolutely.
Know, what's the best
way
to do it?
We need the support. We're 501c3 not-for-profit organization, so any contribution is tax deductible. We encourage you to become a member of our organization. And I don't know if there's any greater way to support a not-for-profit organization of this nature than when you become a member of that organization and say, I'm going to make a pledge each and every year to do a little something to make sure that this story doesn't die. And essentially, you become a stakeholder. Yeah, you become a stakeholder in this organization. And we have members from around the world. Some of them may never step foot in this museum, but they know how important it is that the legacy of the Negro League plays on. And so if you are so inclined and you would like to learn more about financial support of our organization, please log on to www.nlbm.com. There are all kinds of ways in which you can make a contribution. You become a member of the organization, and certainly we appreciate those considerations and support.
I appreciate you. You're amazing.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to see you again.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com.
Many thanks to Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. This is presented by Ryan Kelly, the Home Loan Expert. The good folks at Schnucks, Unique Groceries, Think Local, Think Schnucks, and also Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill. Hotshots has been a proud home of sports fans in St. Louis for over 28 years. 11 area locations. You're always close to a Hotshots no matter where you are. Swing by for great food, cold drinks, all the games, all the time, and find out more, a location near you. There is one near you, hotshotsnet.com. You love Cardinal baseball? Go into Hot Shots. They have drink and food specials during every game. If you're a fantasy football player, Hot Shots the place to be to hold your fantasy football draft. If you're new to Scoops with DannyMac.com, remember I have my visit with John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations for the Cardinals, every Monday, Mondays with Mo, Tuesday and Friday, the minor league reports, and we also have game previews before every game. And every week I'm dropping podcasts as well. Thanks for checking out ScoopsWithDannyMac.com.